Welcome, welcome, coaches, teachers, parents, and medical professionals. You are listening to Larissa Mills and my podcast, At the Table. I am the founder of iParentGen.com, and today and every day, we are going to discuss how families and schools are managing technology and raising children and teaching them. We are also going to listen to how technology is impacting athletes and their level of sport. So, let's get to it. Stay tuned and please call in with your questions or join us on Facebook or follow us on Instagram. But parents, you are not alone. There are courses, articles, and videos on my website. Please sign up for free. So let's get listening. Hi there, Jennifer Freedy. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Larissa. How are you?
Good. I had no idea we were literally neighbors.
Yeah, I know. I'm talking to a lot of people around the world these days because of Zoom, and it's always strange when I think somebody's far away and they're literally down the street.
Literally, like three blocks from where you did a lot of your studies and your research. Well, Jennifer Freedy is a psychotherapist with a master's, RSW in social work, a CCE, and she creates online lessons and sessions for therapists, clients, and students. I would just basically say you're really busy. Therapy, but so you're from
really busy.
Yeah. And I'm so happy I found you in my own backyard. And Jennifer's here today to talk about the polyvagal theory and how we're going to define that, how it affects children's behaviors in schools, at home, and how we can use it to help them in the age of technology. So Jennifer, do you mind telling everybody a little bit about yourself and your studies and your interesting research?
Yeah, I'm a psychotherapist and I'm in private practice. So I've, worked for other people before, but in the last probably 15 years, I've gone into private practice. So I work typically one-on-one and I work with adults, but I also work with parents and their kids. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've learned is really important is a one sort of stop shop thing where a one size fits all model doesn't work. And so I've, as part of my, learning, I've gotten curious about a lot of different therapies that help to build the brain and the nervous system.
Yes.
As well as the mind and the psychology of the person. So I've become really curious not only about how we help minds grow and hearts grow, but also how we help nervous systems grow properly. Because one of the things we know for sure is if your nervous system and your brain are not working well, the other really good stuff within you can't really get through.
Right.
And so
it's so important now when we're stimulating ourselves, right? Like we are stimulating ourselves with everything.
That's right.
Hormone cascades, like for instance, we're binge watching, which emits dopamine, and then we go and we eat, and that emits more dopamine. And so, I really was shocked about. I met with a dietitian who shocked me yesterday about we are consuming almost as much as the United States in sugar and processed foods. 8,736 teaspoons a year a child will eat.
And
you wonder why. There's also behavioral issues, plus
the
phones skyrocketing heart
rates
and stimulating the nervous system, right? Now, you studied, I think it's really fascinating because we know now that parents are spending less time with children. In fact, children are on their phones 4 to 6 hours a day. Adults are on their phones for 4 to 5 hours a day. And over a course of a year, that's 960 hours a year.
Where
families are not spending time together. So your theory or the theory of the parent brain and attachment-based theory, I think is really crucial right now when children are not getting that bonding experience. Can you explain that theory and how it can help families?
Yeah, so I think it's important to think about this in two ways. Number one, when you're on technology, whether you're binge watching Netflix, which a lot of my teens are right now, or you're on the phone a lot, or you're gaming a lot, that is changing the way that your brain is functioning in that moment. So we know that brainwave patterns change and shift out of the way we want them to look when you're doing a lot of technology. So number one, if I'm exercising that every day through gaming, my phone, binge watching and all that kind of stuff, I'm actually changing the way my brain works. And number two, We know that brains grow in a healthy way through connection and attachment and relationship. That's how we build a mind. That's how we build a heart. And that is how we build a brain. And so if I'm on my technology a lot, not only am I changing the way my brain works because of that technology, but I'm also missing out on the relational components with my parent or my child. And that also is preventing the brain from getting the relational kinds of experiences it needs to grow in a healthy direction. And a lot of times, you know, parents don't know this. A lot of parents will say to me, how come they don't teach you at the hospital about, you know, all of the things you need to do and not do to build a healthy brain?
I really wish not they just, would. Really wish they would, because I had wonderful parents, wonderful, warm, loving, supportive. And even then, there's things that, you know, like how do I get one off a bottle to a sippy cup, or potty training? And how do you deal with tantrums? And if I had known, well, thank goodness I had a background in psychology and I knew they had to hit certain levels of attachment. Imagine if I don't have that knowledge.
Yeah. And a lot of parents don't, and they feel frustrated because when I teach them about these kinds of things, they're almost a little bit flabbergasted that this very, very important information that will help build their child to be a better human being, to be a good human being, to be a functional adult, isn't really offered to them. And a lot of what they're familiar with are strictly behavior-based kinds of things. You're looking for an outcome and you'll use whatever means to get that outcome. And actually sometimes that harms the brain or stunts the brain's emotional development, which is vital for a healthy human being in adulthood.
It is. Now, so I really wanted your expertise on the polyvagal theory. So, I mean, I'm familiar with it. It's not my expertise, but I'm very familiar with it. And I think in a time where our nervous systems are being stimulated by what's going on in the world, by 9 out of every 10 times you look at your phone, it's actually a negative feeling. Jealousy, envy, anger, frustration,
There's a lot of triggers through the phone.
So I try and help people design their phones and notify them to make them happy. Instead of notifying you to make you angry. Check in with your phone instead of it reminding you and stimulating you, because basically it's like Pavlovian history going off,
Exactly. Now, every time you get a ping.
And I realized that I had my own story. I had my Pilates studio when I was younger, and those, what they call the Blackberries came in. So I realized that I was working, but working more than I had to. And I missed one of my daughter's appointments, and I missed, and I was missing. And I realized the phones made me more accessible, and they made me work more, and they made me more frustrated. So actually I just had to push them out and focus more on my PC and my work and set times to not be on it. But the polyvagal theory, when I figured out I was being stimulating my nervous system, I had to figure out, okay, what do I need to do? I need to relax. So can you explain for parents what it is?
Yeah, I'll give you it in a nutshell, and I'll let parents know that I do a seminar on this because I think it's so important. I do one for therapists, but I'm also thinking about doing one specific to parenting. So I'm going to give it.
That would be great.
It's necessary, and parents and kids. I teach kids polyvagal theory too, because they get really curious and interested in how their brain works. So what I say is really simply, think about us as human beings operating in three sort of general states. One is what we, a fancy term, we call it the window of tolerance, which just means it's a state of being where I feel present, calm, I'm functioning, I'm doing what I need to be doing in this moment. If I'm having emotions, whether good emotions or difficult emotions, I'm able to tolerate those. And most importantly, or one of the important pieces about this state, is I'm able to relate to others. So the attachment components of my brain are on, and I can engage, whether it's with my parent or my child or my teacher or my friends, but I can have those social experiences that help to build the prefrontal cortex, which is a really very important part of the brain. It's the part that makes us healthy human beings.
Right.
So that window of tolerance, I always say to parents and to my kids, how often are you actually able to access your window of tolerance? And number two, how often are you able to parent out of there? Because a lot of times parents will say, I'm parenting out of either the second or the third state.
Yeah.
The second state is called, which a lot of people have heard of, is a fight flight.
Yeah.
And the brain and the body actually look really different chemically when we're in fight flight versus when we're in our window of tolerance. So this fancy term, but the sympathetic nervous system, when we get upset about something, can activate and put me into fight flight, which means that my chemistry is different. I'm louder, I'm stronger, I'm faster. And there are moments, of course, in life where that helps me, but parenting daily out of fight flight doesn't help me, and it doesn't help my relationship with my child, and it doesn't grow my kid's brain in the right direction. Right.
Would you say that mostly if you're in the fight or flight stage, your adrenaline is up and you're more likely to lash out in anger?
Yeah. So the body is designed in fight flight by nature to make you stronger and louder and faster, so that if you truly are in danger, you can fight it off or run from it faster than you would in your normal way of being when you're in window of tolerance. So if I find that that's easy for me, or my nervous system is really well programmed to go up into fight or flight because of my own backstory that was difficult, or because I'm engaging with a lot of things in life these days, or on my phone or at work or in a relationship that frequently put me up in fight flight, then it's really easy for me to go up there, and it's really easy for me then to parent out of there. It's really easy for me to be triggered by my child and parent out of the yelling and the urgency and the reacting and the more aggressive kinds of things. And of course, in that state, I can't also listen to my child, better understand what's going on with my kid, continue a connection with my child during a parenting moment, because I'm up in either fighting you off or getting away from you. And then there's the third state, which we call freeze collapse or freeze faint. And this is the state where I become so overwhelmed by my child that I don't know how to respond. So I either get into more submitting to them, or more numbing out when they get activated, or feeling really unsure what to do. And I kind of either freeze and lose my connection, or I kind of numb out and fade out or even dissociate out, and I can't be present to parent what they really need in that moment. So when I work with parents, I take my chart out that explains these three states, and I say, number one, which one do you find your own state of being in day to day? What percentage of the time are you in window of tolerance versus fight, flee versus shutdown? And number two, how often would you say you're parenting out of window of tolerance, fight, flight, versus, and shutdown? And if parents say to me, well, roughly 80, 85% of the time I'm parenting out of my window of tolerance, where I'm present and, you know, capable of staying empathic and hearing my child and working, see the big picture of what they're going through and help them through it, then I say, you're probably doing pretty good. It's for parents that say, I parent out of there like 20%. Means that 80% of the time, the way I'm parenting and growing my child is from a fight flight stance or a shutdown. And that's obviously a problem. And of course, usually the kids that are being parented with that are showing behavior of some sort because they're not getting what they need. Their development isn't happening the way it needs to. And that shows itself through behavior problems that bring the parent to therapy with their kid. Right. So it's not just working with the child, it's working with the parent.
And that's the way it should be.
That's the way,
because parents, more often than I thought when I went on this journey of learning about this, they kind of want to send their kid away to behave, to fit into the box of how they want to parent.
But can you please fix my child?
Exactly. And it doesn't work that way at all. In fact, I find it backfires. And when they go back to the parent, parent still hasn't made the necessary habitual changes and routines and how That's they speak to their child. I mean, and I have three different children, three very, very different.
Yes, of course. Yep.
And I had to really adjust because one's more introverted and the other two are, and one is very extroverted.
Right.
And so I had to learn how to parent the introvert.
You become a parent, you become three parents based on the children you get. You're parenting different. You don't parent your kids the same and you can't.
And I think that once I had that awareness of when that was happening, I had to look inside and say, am I putting them on a path? Am I parenting all of them the same? I can't do that. It's got to be.
That's right.
So once I figured out what their needs were, they needed autonomy and like they were like a little adult and I had to learn to just let them go and make their own mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. This is the balance where, and this is a really tricky thing too. It's where parents are saying, how much of the parenting do I, you know, if I say to parents, let's get you parenting more in that window of tolerance or that, that healthy state, within that state, there's still a lot of questions in terms of how much autonomy do I offer versus when do I set the boundaries and not go into submitting or parenting out of, I don't know what to do.
Is that not age dependent too, Jennifer?
It is age dependent.
I can't do that with a 10-year-old that I can do with her. She
was
right. Yeah.
Right. So there are some guidelines. They differ, you know, a little bit, but there are some guidelines based on age. But there are times when your 17-year-old will benefit from you connecting more with them or learning. One of the things I teach parents is teaching them how to listen to what that child needs in that moment. And what, and I'll say it in a bit of a different way, what their nervous system needs in that moment. Yeah. And it's a little bit like being a child whisperer. You have to learn the nuance of listening to what's really going on because parents always get caught in what they see on the surface. And that's, you know, you'll do that 20% of the time.
And then there's the iceberg theory, right? Like what is going on below that surface?
Yeah. And a lot of times, there's a lot of, often there's a lot of brain and nervous system and psychological needs that are being expressed through a behavior. And if we get caught in looking only at the behavior, I say to parents, think of your child's behavior as a text message from their nervous system saying something's going on for me and I don't know how to get this sorted out. I don't know how to get back into my own window of tolerance. Can you help me? And if we look only at the behavior and ways to correct that behavior, we miss an opportunity to help the kid build better actually inside, not only from a psychological perspective, but a brain perspective.
I see kids coming to school now, like, and these are through interviews too, as well, but I find them fidgety. And
yeah, they're very fidgety. They're very antsy.
They can't focus for more than a minute. And when I go to coach these young women, I'm finding they're coming with less skills.
Very much so.
They can't communicate. They can't compromise. They're not coordinated.
No, they're not.
Right now in the world of athleticism for my other podcast series, two of these physiotherapists and one Olympic coach said he is seeing a division in athleticism. So this division is what frightens me because the division was athletes over here.
Right.
Because they're multi-sport athletes. So they're getting tone. They're getting their proprioception.
That's right.
They're relaxing. They're getting their coordination, their muscular endurance and cardio. But then there's this whole other new child.
Yeah.
For the first time in history, you're seeing unhealthy children who aren't developing, aren't being fed right, who are either obese or underweight. And they can't coordinate when they're running or told to do something. So now there's phys ed classes where they have complete opposite kids now.
Yes.
It used to be one or two kids. Now it's half.
Yeah. A lot of the kids that I work with or the young adults, let's say, it's when you talk about proprioception, which is just a fancy term for how my brain is able to sense myself in space and time and maneuver my body. A lot of those
age, it's not so great.
Yes. Right.
I fell in my dance class the other day. I was like, what just happened?
But I didn't take it from you a bit. Yeah. But you know, the kids that come into their appointments, I can always tell when they're arriving because they're banging up against walls and slamming doors and clomping in and tripping over things, and they're clumsy. And again, you can see that even their sense of themselves in their outer space, their brain development around that, which is about movement and connection with other and engaging in mobility with those that I'm connected to, that helps to build that part of the brain, is not happening. So they're doing a lot of this.
Yes.
And they're not, and because they're doing a lot of this, and I'm doing a lot of this as the parent, there's not only is this parenting and wiring my brain, but the loss of connection and movement and engaging is also adding insult to injury. And parents are all, I mean, I'm so big on teaching parents about the brain, their own and their child, because they just say, I felt like it was a mind thing. I felt like it was a behavior thing. I didn't realize that these simple things of letting my kid game for 3 hours is actually stunting their very important brain development. Yeah.
It was interesting. Just to comment on that. 2 years ago, I found this pediatrician. He's a neurologist in Cleveland Hospital in Cincinnati. His name is Dr. John Hutton, and he has been studying, he's been MRIing children's brains. Yeah.
Right.
And so he takes the linguistic part of the brain only.
Yeah.
And he looks at that part and he says, there's nothing going on. Because he calls it the YouTube video zombie state. Because if they're not talking, they're not using their brain. They're not getting anything else they need if they're just sitting and watching.
Right.
And he says, this is scary, because he sees more and more out of the percentage of his study. He's seeing more with the gray matter in the brain. It's not connecting.
Right.
And he says, that's why we're seeing the behavioral issues in JK. Right. I couldn't believe what happened in a JKSK class. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. This is where we're wiring the children more to be either in fight, flee, or that kid, that zoning out sort of ADHD kid who's down in what we call dorsal vagal activation. They're parts of their brain that zombie them out are getting a lot of practice. So think of this, when I am in a zombied sort of state or a zone out kind of state, and now part of my job is to go into, when I'm not in COVID, but even when I'm in COVID, when I'm supposed to sit still and pay attention for 40 minutes or 45 minutes, that having to put my intention outward and not zone inward is so uncomfortable that I start to do this and I start to do this and I start to bug my neighbor and I start to zone out and daydream and go back into that state.
Yeah.
So my learning, my brain's ability to take in and process and store information, not happening.
Yeah.
And actually,
classroom with 33 kids that are all sitting there with their phones underneath their desk, at their desk.
Yeah.
And they're all looking to see who's texted them. So by the end of the day, brains, psychotherapist I spoke to said they have already been stimulated with heart rate over 140 to 160.
Yeah.
By the end of the day, they've already had 230 texts, but they were supposed to be focusing at school.
Yeah.
So the teachers have to keep repeating the information. So when they get home, they almost want to nap.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? They want
to or eat a lot of sugar to pick themselves up.
Yeah.
I was just pick about their to brain up.
Grab the snacks. And then they're too weak and tired to go to basketball, volleyball, rowing, football, and they're getting injured. So when I speak to, for instance, I had an occupational therapist, a pediatrician or a pediatric occupational therapist on last week. She says her numbers have doubled.
Yeah.
Because kids can't use scissors, a pen. Yeah. They're not able to move, they're uncoordinated. She says technology has fully supplied her with a more than full-time business.
Right. And if you think about our generation, you and I are probably around the same age. I didn't grow up with the internet. Internet came in when I was about 23 or 4.
Yeah.
And cell phones, I didn't have a cell phone up until 10 years ago. So my ability to really understand all this stuff, right? And to moderate my use of it. You know, I come with a backstory of a lot of skills that help me do that because right. my that childhood didn't involve this stuff. But we as the adults who are sort of first generation parenting these technology kids, I mean, you know, the generations moving forward will figure out how to navigate this, but we're on the cutting edge of it. So we don't really understand it either. And unfortunately, the technology is getting out ahead of us and parenting our
way
children.
Out ahead.
And we also, because we don't understand the brain stuff, we're also not understanding that real well. These two components of, I don't know how my kid's brain works, and I also don't know how to monitor their technology better. You put those two together. And you end up with a 25-year-old who has very limited social skills, very limited problem solving, the very problematic proprioception. Right. The other thing, Dr. Leonard Sachs, if I'm right about that, I think it Leonard Sachs, who was saying that there's about to be a generation of boys who are going to be so socially ill-equipped mm-hmm. that their ability to find partners who are looking for a male partner are going to have a hard time if they're socially equipped and intellectual yeah. and all this kind of stuff yeah. because there's this generation of boys, I think they're calling it the boy crisis, where they're sort of in the basement gaming and on their phones yeah. and not getting the connection they need, and they're not going to be able to be adults
social.
And in fact a lot of the
functioning skills
right so a lot of the 20-year-olds that I see, particularly the boys, are really like 12-year-olds, and they're learning very, very basic things. And their parents are also having to learn how to build this child into a functioning adult. So it's really scary, and it's really,
well, that's
it's
why
really
I'm trying
unfortunate.
To fight the battle with technology.
Yes.
I just find that as soon as we decrease it, even by 2 or 3 hours a day,
yeah.
they're so much happier.
That's right. Parents will tell me that when they get clear about we're setting boundaries with the technology and we're going to fight the 4-day battle of craving that, because it is like an addiction.
It's a tapering.
You know? It's yeah. a tapering, but you have to understand as a parent that, you know, you're going to fight the good fight on that for 4, 5, 6 days until that brain that is actually addicted to the technology. And we know that brains that are addicted to alcohol and drugs
yep.
And gambling and things like that actually look very similar to the teenage brain that's addicted to the phone. Once we can fight that battle and the kids' brains actually start to grow and develop the abilities they need, and the behavior of them starts to change. So in a funny way, there are some more simple solutions,
there
if
are.
You like,
it's actually
cut
really
and dry simple. Solutions to this. Yeah.
Yeah. And what would you recommend? I got to wrap up here, but
yep.
what are 3 things that
yep.
you would recommend to parents to not stimulate that nervous system and to calm that for kids? Because basically they're stimulating it till 3 a.m. at night now.
Right.
They get 4 hours of sleep and then they go to school and then they
right, right, right. Well, number one, I would say psychoeducation. The parent needs to learn, first of all, in their own education about the care and feeding and growing of a human being. Raising a human from scratch is a big deal. And there are a lot of specific things that need to happen to so that by the time the kid's 25, you've got a pretty functional human being. Mm-hmm. So the parent needs to educate themselves about brain development of the child. And they also need to learn how to educate their children about
yes.
their own brains.
Right.
And so that's where we talk to kids about growing their window of tolerance and fight, flight, and shutdown and how they can help moderate that. Mm-hmm. Number two, you have to set technology boundaries, and if you don't know how to do that, or you're worried about the fight from your kid in doing that, get some support from a therapist who can walk you through how to do that and support you through that, and how to endure that
yeah.
1 or 2 week
yeah.
you know
That's
withdrawal period.
To say that, because I just wrote a course called the 30-day phone addiction detox,
mm-hmm.
and I help parents walk through
right.
4 weeks.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't even take 4 weeks. It takes a week.
Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't take
it's
as long as
it's way easier, but
that's
unless
right.
they have me or a support group or a group, they
right.
find that it's hard.
And yes. Like, you, And it's hard to do it on your own. It's a little bit like, it's a little bit like helping a family member who's addicted kind of go through that withdrawal phase. So we need to be really clear what those are, how to be consistent, and parents need to include themselves in that. So there are some, your course there might be a really good resource for parents. I'm sure you've covered all the ways that you can do that in there. But parents also need to learn how to manage their own addiction to their technology. And number three, and number three, we need to be doing more relational stuff with our kids. It's so easy after a hard day to just let them go on technology.
I know.
We're tired too. But the times where parents, I've walked parents through how to sort of detox their kids a bit off the phone. And I say, as a part of that, you're also going to start engaging more with your child.
Yes. Yes.
And because that's also a brain builder and a prefrontal cortex builder. And not only that, but you're going to feel your child with you again. And so there are very specific ways that we set up activities so you can start relating with your kid again, front brain to front brain, and build that window of tolerance. So those would be the three categories of things.
Good. Those are just off the top of my head, when I do speak to parents about, okay, if you're trying to tape your kids off their phones, you have to kind of help occupy them. So, you know, go back to playing president. Do you know how many times I've played president? Like we play cards every night.
Right.
We play concentration. We play code breaker. Right. We play, I don't even know what that game is, Cards Against Humanity, but the, but the PG version.
Oh, apples to apples?
No, I think it's called Cards of Maturity or something. Anyway, really fun with little guys. Like, because I have a span of 9 to 17.
Yes, you have a lot of range there. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have to be careful there, but they love this game. And then we watch hockey together or we go to the hot tub, but you just have to give them 30 minutes, 40 minutes of your
that's
time.
Right. You have to fill Gordon Neufeld, who's a real guru with all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Really talks about building and filling your attachment. It sounds kind of corny, but it is the truth. Filling their attachment tank with you.
Yeah.
It's not about finding something else to occupy them. It's about helping you need to fill them. That's actually what helps grow their brain and their mind and their heart. And there's no, you're not getting away from that. That's the deal.
Yeah. It's really amazing once you start to see the self-talk in themselves coming, like their decision-making. And it's only because we're talking to them. But because parents aren't talking to their kids, they're not learning any of these coping skills.
No. And of course, the things that they're also seeing in online are some of the things the kids show me. I don't think their parents realize what's really out there to be found.
Right.
And young, curious minds. And if that's who's also parenting your child, that opens up a door to a whole lot of other problems.
That's a whole other episode.
That's a whole other episode. Yeah.
Maybe you and I should cover social media and comparativism and.
There's all kinds of stuff here. Yeah.
So, Jennifer, where can people get a hold of you and where do you have your practice?
So my practice is in London, but I do a lot of online consulting. COVID helped that a little bit, but I was already doing a lot of that. And if they want to reach me, they can go to my website where all my contact information and the way that I work with people and even information about my seminars. So my website is jenniferfreedy.ca and Jennifer is one N. So jenniferfreedy.ca.
When I go to email you, it's one N.
It's one N. And they can read about me and get in contact with me. We can go from there if they like.
Well, thank you so much for meeting with me today and helping parents learn other strategies and approaches and understanding how their children's brains are working. Because I think that's really at the root of a lot of our parenting issues, besides dealing with technology and the age of technology. My parents didn't know. My dad would just say, get that out of their hands.
That's simple.
it was that simple. And it's more about they're here, but we definitely, the Canadian Pediatric Society is saying there are no technology under six.
Yes. Because it's changing the brain.
Because it's changing their brain and it's making them bond with technology instead of humans.
Yeah.
And I think that that is only going to be rising.
I agree. I agree.
I think it's the pendulum has gone here.
Yeah.
Healthcare education are at their epitome of just crisis.
Yeah.
And it needs to come back because it'll hurt the healthcare system.
That's right. And the benefit of this is it's showing us what really, it's forcing parents to learn more about how to rear a child and all of the elements about that. And so when you learn about that, it gives you a lot more power and understanding. And then you don't feel so at the mercy of all this other stuff. So it actually helps parents feel better too. And here's just a last piece. Yeah. When parents feel good about their parenting, it actually changes their brain. Parents who do not feel good about their parenting or miss their children. Yeah. There's a really interesting book about that called The Parenting Brain. But if you feel
Make
good
sure
about
you
your
post that to my Instagram or my
I will
I'd like to read that. Maybe I have already, but maybe my parents would like to read it.
Yes, I have it here. Yes, it's called Brain-Based Parenting. So it's on my bookshelf here.
I think I did read that.
Yeah. So again, not only does this help your kids, but it helps you to feel like a good parent. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for being here today, Jennifer. And I hope that actually we can do this again on another topic.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here at the
table. My pleasure.